Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Stone Age Gamer Podcast, episode 44. I'm your host, Chris, and with me tonight are Dan.
Hey.
Tiff.
Hi.
And Dean.
Pork chop sandwiches.
God damn, those smell good. Me. No, I'm just fucking with you.
Body massage.
Oh, God, Johnny, I haven't seen your mother in, what's it been, 15 years?
Oh.
Oh, shit.
Jesus.
I'm sorry, Chris. That's
fine. Well, speaking of sorry.
We started off well.
Sorry for last week's episode outage. We had some unfortunate technical difficulties, but we would again like to give a big thanks to everybody at South Jersey Geek Fest for being excellent hosts, and thanks to everybody who came to participate in our live show that is sadly lost to the ether forevermore. That said, we have a great show lined up for everybody tonight. Since last week we did the trivia at Geek Fest, tonight we're going to be covering the games that we played in the month of March. So we're going to start with Dean and Tiff, take a quick break, come back, finish out the show with Dan and my game. So let's just jump right in and get started with Dean. What did you play, and what were your what was your favorite game of March?
I played Attack the Light, and it was definitely my favorite game of March. It was fucking awesome. Attack the Light is a Steven Universe game, which I'm on a big Cartoon Network kick lately, as Dan can attest to by our last episode of Paper Cuts. And Steven Universe is just this great cartoon about these gem warriors, I guess you'd call it. And there used to be four of them. They used to fight evil all the time and everything. And one of them ended up having a kid and getting away from all of it. And she ended up dying. And she wanted her kid to take her place. So it's this story about her kid trying to come to terms with being a superhero and finding his powers and everything, and these three other warriors trying to help him along. So the game takes place in the same vein as the comic books and the TV show, where it's all the same characters and everything, a lot of the same monsters. However, it's fucking Paper Mario with Steven Universe characters, and that's what I love about it. It's fun. It's super simple. It's a lot easier than Paper Mario. It's Paper Mario Lite, essentially. So, you know, I could play it on my phone for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, come back to it later, and it's still the game that I was playing before. It's not like I forgot. It's not like I have to readjust myself to get back into the game or anything. It's exactly the way I left it, and that's what I like about it. It's super simple, and it has enough RPG elements to keep me invested. Now, when I mean it's like Paper Mario, you got all those cool, like, swipe to hit 10 times or whatever, or, you know, tap the screen at just the right time to get a bonus, tap the screen at just the right time to defend correctly so you take less damage. There's badges and stuff that you can collect. They level up. You can level up your attack, your luck, your defense, or you can get special moves and everything, and it's really cool. I've had a really great time playing. I'm on like the second or third level already, and I've only been playing for a few days. Steven Universe Attack the Light, it's great. You can find it on the iOS store. I think I paid $2.99 for it, but it's the fully unlocked game already. There's no pay-to-play aspect of it, so I mean, why not? For $3 you get a fully fledged RPG. You got me. I'm sold.
No, just to clarify this, you kept saying that this game is basically Paper Mario with Steven Universe. It doesn't share the aesthetics of Paper Mario, right? It's from the little bit I saw, it just looks more like a lot like the cartoon, not like the paper.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it doesn't look like Paper Mario. But it shares many, many, many of the same mechanics. In fact, I'd say most of them are still intact between the badges, the luck stuff going on, a lot of the same mechanics where, you know, it has the meter where you can hit it in between, to hit that sweet spot to get extra damage. You can stretch things across the screen and whatnot. You can tap, swipe, all sorts of different mechanics there that they're using, which are normally done with a controller, but now thanks to iOS devices, it's a lot easier to do more interactive things with it.
So you said it's $3?
Yeah, I believe it's $2.99.
And Is this like a typical iOS game that you can only play for a little bit before your energy runs down and you either have to wait or buy more energy?
No, it's just
a game and that $3 gets you everything.
Yeah, it gets you absolutely everything.
That's awesome.
Nice. And different from
yeah.
most iOS titles.
From the majority of mobile titles.
To be honest,
yeah.
I mean, I've played a lot of the Cartoon Network games and Adult Swim games, and most of them, like, if you're going to purchase the game, they give you what you're paying for most of the time, which is exactly what you're getting. There's one, there's something Unicorn Attack or whatever, and that
Robot
one,
Unicorn Attack.
Yeah, and
love
that one,
that game.
Yeah, it's super simple and straightforward, and I think it was like $1 or whatever, but I had plenty of fun playing it, and it was exactly what I was expecting. It was the full game. I didn't have to buy anything extra if I didn't want to. You know, it was what I want in mobile games. Charge me what I'm going to get. Don't tell me it's free and then fucking say I can only play for 10 minutes and then I have to invite someone from Facebook or pay $10. I don't like that.
Yeah, that's a bunch of bullshit. You explained a lot about the battle mechanics. Is there a lot to the overworld type of thing? Because I know one of the stalwarts of Paper Mario is they, at least the better Paper Mario games, they do those weird things where you can like fold yourself into a paper airplane.
No, it's
puzzle solving elements. Is there any of that to it? Or?
There's very, very mild ones like the original sort, where it's just like, oh, here's a button, find the key.
Okay, so
unlock it.
The majority
pretty much
of
like
what
that.
You're doing is the actual battles,
the battling, and I got to say the one boss battle that I did was actually pretty impressive. I was sort of taken back. Like I was like, you know, when I've played a mobile game, I've never really thought they were hard to say, you know, anything about it. So when I got to the first boss, it was this three-tailed scorpion, and he also had an eye. So you had the choice of taking out all three tails and then going for the body and then the tails respawning one by one each turn. Or you can try and just go really, really ham on the body and try just beating it down before the tails can do enough damage. However, each tail does a specific thing. Like one tail would do direct damage to you. Another tail would spawn an enemy in front of you that you'd have to take out separately from the boss. And I believe the third tail was like a lesser sort of area of effect attack, so it would hurt all your guys instead. And then the boss could also attack you as well, I believe. So, yeah, there was a lot going on. And like I said, you had to sort of make a strategic choice whether to go for the tails or try to go for the boss directly instead, which was sort of difficult. I mean, I didn't die or anything, but I got kind of close. And for a first-level boss, it was pretty impressive. Normally, first-level bosses are not memorable at all. This one was up there as far as iOS games go anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I could see myself definitely finishing this game. In fact, I most likely will. I had a lot of fun playing it. And for $3, it's definitely worth it.
What is the leveling system, right? Like, obviously, it's not as deep as like a Final Fantasy VII materia system, probably. Is it automatically leveling, or do you get to pick a little bit, like, with a skill tree, or?
It's not necessarily a skill tree. It's more like, you know, if you guys haven't played Paper Mario before. I know you and Tiff have said that you guys haven't really played any of those games, right?
Right, because fucking Nintendo.
not a problem. essentially, the way those games worked is they were just more simpler RPGs, kind of stressed more towards like kids and everything. So it was like,
right.
Hey, you can upgrade your attack, you can upgrade your defense, and you can upgrade your luck or like health or something a lot of the time. So you had those three to pick from, and you have three different characters in your party. So, you know, you can try and balance them out, make one like a super big tank, make another one like really big attack status, and make another one really, really good at like healing or magic attacks and everything. Or, you know, you could just straight up do things all over the place or make them exactly the same. It doesn't really matter. So those are really the choices. Again, it's meant to be like a simpler game, which is nice because, again, you know, if this was a fully fledged like hardcore RPG, you know, and you're going through all these different stats and everything, it would take you hours to, you know, make sure your guy's right. In this, it's just more like, yep, no, I want his health to go up, I'll raise his defense. Or, oh, no, I want him to attack harder, I'll make attack higher. You know, stuff like that, which makes it a lot simpler to choose from.
That's nice, though, that they still at least give you some
Yes, at
some
least there's
choice.
An option. Yeah. And then, you know, it's cool. The higher you level up, you unlock more attacks and everything as you go along. And some of the attacks are really cool. Like, Dan and Tiff, you guys have kids. Have you guys ever seen the show?
Briefly?
Very briefly.
Okay.
They don't love it. I think it's a little too
We watched
over their
an episode
head
once. There,
still.
There was some sort of a concert type situation.
It's like highbrow cartoons. It's not like slapstick or silly like Adventure Time is. It's quite a bit deeper. And
yeah, like it's a cartoon for like 10-year-olds.
Yeah, because even Adventure Time, they're like, you know, they laugh when Lubby Space Princess comes along and whatever, but they don't really. The story's a little too overarching, and they just don't care that much.
Nah, I gotcha. Well, anyway, there's one of these characters called Pearl, and she's like a very tall, slender woman, and she carries a spear. And in the game, when she first starts out, she doesn't really have any like good attacks or anything, but her second level attack, or whatever you want to call it, skill, is you pull the your finger back off the screen, and she starts pulling your spear back with it, and if you aim it correctly at a enemy and it hits, it does like 40 damage, so it's basically a one-hit kill on whatever you hit. Now, the cool part is that it goes through that enemy and will hit another enemy at the same attack. So if you aim it correctly, you can hit 3 or 4 people with the same spear, which
cool.
is sort of a cool mechanic, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Angry Birds.
Essentially, yes. Yes, just like Angry Birds.
No wonder you love it. There you go.
Of course. Just that one attack makes the game.
Time it all again.
Yeah, man. So, if anyone's looking for sort of an RPG fix, you know, on the go, that's kind of the way to go, man. I'm really enjoying the game, and it's $3. You can't get that on the DS, dude. So, you know, I would say pick that up. It's definitely worth the $3.
Interesting. Yeah, it's definitely not a game that I would have ever considered. I don't really do a whole lot of mobile gaming, but
I saw it on Kotaku and I was like, you know what? Let me give it a shot. And I was surprised and very happy I purchased it.
Neat. All right. Well, Tiff, what was your game of March?
My favorite game was Home, which is a kind of a point-and-click adventure, very old-school style, even to the point that it is all pixels. It looks very old-school, but it is extremely unique. In fact, it is called a unique horror adventure. It was made by a dude. His name was Benjamin Rivers, and it originally was a PC game, and then it was an iPhone game, and now it is on PlayStation, and is it already on Vita, or is it...
Yeah.
It is already on Vita.
I think it's PS4 and Vita.
So it's pretty typical of the kind of point-and-click horror games that are out there and that, like, oh, I've woken up in a mysterious house and I don't know what's going on. I better walk around and explore things. But the fact that it's all side-scrolling pixels is really, really interesting. And you would really think that going into it that there's no way that pixels are going to get it done. Like, there's no way that I'm going to have any kind of suspense or anything. This cute little sprite that looks an awful lot like Matt Smith, which I found off-putting to begin with, but I mostly got over it later. But they really, really do a really good job of getting the suspense up. There's obviously little clues along the way that kind of start to piece a couple things together. The deal is you've woken up, you're in a strange house. You don't know why you're there. You don't know how you've gotten there. All that you know is that there is a Rachel and you are anxious to get back to her. And in the room next to you, there's a dead man.
And you hurt your leg, right? I watched the very beginning of it. And,
yes.
And
as you, yep. As you
really
go down the first staircase, you realize that you're limping. You also realize that there is mud and, you know, detritus caked on your boots. Your clothes are torn. Every now and again in the house, I don't want to give too much away because there's a lot of, you know, spoilery kind of things. But every now and again in the house, you'll find things that belong to you, which is very unsettling to be in a strange house and start finding your possessions and pictures of your house and little things like that.
Real quick, before you go any further, you mentioned the staircase, and I wanted to point out this was what really drew me to it. You told me about the game very briefly before we looked at the show, and I looked at a video on YouTube, and what the game did that really I thought was a really impressive trick, and it's not all that visually impressive, but it works better than I think it ever did in Resident Evil, where Resident Evil did that thing where you'd walk through a door and it disguised its loading screen as you slowly approaching
right,
the door.
Yes, yes.
It does
the loading
that in this game.
Is either the ladder going up and down, or you clunking down the stairs, or the door creaking open. Yes, and because of that, it feels very smooth, and it feels very much like a cartridge game. I did notice that a lot, that there is no loading, there is no any of those things that would kind of give it away as a more modern game, except maybe the sophistication of the story a little bit. Even the icons, when you come across something in there, say you've found a gun, a screen will pop up and it says, I see a gun laying here, I'm really uncomfortable around guns, do I pick up the gun anyway? And then it'll give you an option of yes or no. And even those icons, even though they are the little PlayStation icons, they still do a really good job of making it look like old school A or B. And what's also interesting about it is that the narration that happens is all done in the second person. And it's very weird, and it's very subtly off-putting, and it almost makes you a part of this story, but also not at the same time. And it's almost kind of told in the past tense. It's very, I don't know. I was so surprised. The whole game is about an hour and a half. And it tells you at the beginning, there are autosave points. You can stop and come back to it, but it is recommended that you sit down and play the whole game start to finish in one sitting. And I would completely agree with that. Now, an hour and a half doesn't seem like very long. And here's why it's worth your money. Every time you come across something that says, did I pick the gun up? Did I go down into the basement? Did I look under this box? You can choose either direction, and either direction that you choose vastly changes the course of the game. And throughout the main part of it, as you're choosing those things, it seems very similar to any of the point-and-click ones, especially, you know, that are coming back big now with Game of Thrones and Fables and all that kind of stuff. It really doesn't seem like, okay, there's going to be a little bit of an option here. Something's going to happen, and I'm either going to need the gun or I'm not going to have the gun. But mostly it doesn't change it too much. But this game takes it to a place that none of them really have. Because without spoiling anything, I told you there's a Rachel and you're trying to get back to her. Throughout the course of you going through the game, the anticipation is building and the suspense is building. What's happened to Rachel? Is she okay? What's going on? At some point, you come to a pile of rags that, as you're walking up to it, you're really feeling like Rachel's going to be under these rags. So you go up to it, and it says, there's a collection of rags here. You move them aside. But the question here is not whether you look or not look. The question that is asked is Rachel under those rags? At which point I had to actually put down the controller and walk away for a little bit because that surprised the hell out of me. And I had no idea what to do at that point. Like, I was floored.
So
I was like, are you,
it asks you to answer that question.
It asks you to tell it how it's going to end. Did you just find your, whoever Rachel is to you, or did you not? And I couldn't decide. I was like, I really feel like it is because of the way that we've gone in the story, but I really want to know what you're going to come at me with if it's not. So I made my choice, and I played through the game the way that it was, and shit got weird after I made my choice. And it went a little bit further after that, and then your character starts to have kind of an existential crisis, and then credits. And I'm just kind of sitting here while the credits are happening. And the only thing I could think was, I want to do it again. I want to do it again. I want to do it again right now. Because there was a door that I didn't go through. There was a thing I didn't pick up. There was a decision I made. I want to do it again because I want to see how it ends differently. And that's never happened to me in a video game before. So I was really, really impressed that it, you know, some this little pixelated cutesy whatever thing really got me in and really got me interested. And probably when we get off the show tonight, I'm probably going to do it again.
Now, how much is this game?
Well, right now it is free on the PlayStation Store. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was the free game last month.
I think it's...
I forgot. It's a new month
I
now.
I think it's like...
It's not
either $2.99 or $4.99,
and you can get it on your phone. Hmm.
Well, I mean, I have a Vita, and it's I booted up my Vita and did the 9,000 hours of updates because of the eventual Axiom Verge, which will make me love that thing once again. But I mean, if
oh
this
yeah,
is like a couple of bucks. I'm kind
yeah,
of excited
and it's,
to.
And it's
to,
so
I might
fast.
Give this a try.
And it's so interesting to me that. It is so fast, but it is literally, I mean, I feel like the title, A Unique Horror Adventure, is kind of a little cute play on words, because it's not unique in that it's different from every other game, even though it is. I think it's titled A Unique Horror Adventure because every time you press start, it's a new game. And it just fascinates me. I have never seen a, like, choose-your-own-adventure style thing like that take it that far. And it was so good. It was so simple and so perfect.
What I thought was really cool about it was because it's not going to blow you away with graphical fidelity and big gross monsters and scares and that sort of thing. The character has a flashlight that guides you through the game. And other than that, like, you get a little halo of light around your character, and that's about
it.
All you can see. And there's plenty of more to the levels. Like, when you walk into a room, you can go left or right and look at other stuff, but you cannot see
you can only see what's in the field of your flashlight. And the other thing that's interesting about it is there are several different locations. Like, you start off in the house, and then you go under the house, and then you go outside, and then there's a different building. So there's several different locations, and there's a crap ton of rooms inside each of those locations, as naturally in this type of game. However, if you choose the wrong door, which I actually did the first time I played through, and I actually quit the game in the middle because I was very unhappy about what happened. If you choose the wrong door, sometimes you can't go back. There's one point where I saw a door and I knew that was the next step, but there's a door to my left here, so I just want to check out what's in here before I go on to that next step. So I checked out what was in that door, and I happened to find myself outside and the door locked behind me. So whatever was supposed to happen and whatever I was supposed to find in that room that was the next step, I missed it completely because I walked out the wrong door. And I was like, nope, we're not doing that. So I started over. And that happens frequently. You have to choose wisely.
So if you die in the game, you die in real life.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yes.
Got it.
I did just look it up. It's $4.99. And
well
that's,
worth it.
That's not bad at all.
It is so worth $4.99.
Over and
it's
over.
Got,
and
yeah,
over
it's got
again.
I think we looked it up just by looking at the trophy list on it. I think it's got four endings.
There's way
finishes.
More than that. You get there are four trophies that you get for four specific endings, but the possibilities, I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
there are so many opportunities that for you to take a sharp turn in this, and there's so many in the one ending that I got to. There are so many, like, okay, but what happened with that thing over there, and then what was that, and then who was that guy? So I have to imagine there is an ending for all of those different things.
Yeah, it's really impressive to, like, it's out of all the video games that I've played, it's only the second game that I can think of that has ever used second person narrative, because second person narrative is incredibly difficult to do. The only other one that I can even think of that did it was, I believe it was a PS2 and GameCube game called 13. It was like a weird cel-shaded first-person shooter.
Yeah.
second-person narrative is so hard because you're supposed to put yourself in the place of you're being told a story about yourself that you don't remember.
Right.
And that's so hard to do. But just this game giving you those choices, like I'm sitting here watching Tiff play it, and it's like, you know, there's this thing on the floor. Did I pick that up? You know, and it's like, all right, I get to make that choice. But it's like, so I'm influencing
and then, like,
this world, but it's sort of me at the same time.
Yeah, sometimes you make the choice, and he's like, so I did it. I don't really know why I did it, and I don't feel good about it. But it's so good. It was so surprising. And the second person thing is a really interesting choice because it is really hard to do, and it is also very awkward and almost puts you in like kind of an awkward place. Like the tools that this guy used to get you into that suspense in a very cartridge style, very simplistic game is very impressive because
yeah, there's like no music, it's just sound design. It's just
yeah,
like
it's, you know, footsteps and doors opening. At one point, Dan actually came into the room and said, "I can always tell when you're playing a horror game because you have the controller over your face." And I do. I hold the controller up like over my nose and like hide behind the controller while I'm playing it. And it's not really scary, like boo, I got you scary. But it is very...
It's eerie.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is.
In
it
the
is
best
very
way.
Eerie and very uncomfortable. It was awesome. It's and one of those games that I imagine playing through on the Vita would be really cool as well. You know, because the Vita is usually like, you play it in bed. You know, like lights off kind of thing is where a
oh,
lot
yeah,
of
it does,
gaming. Yeah,
it does.
Headphones.
It does say that at the beginning of the game before you press start, it says turn the music up, put your headphones on, and turn the lights off. Which I didn't do any of those things because I'm not crazy.
Because I'm a baby.
But it was really, really surprising. I'm not going to say it's the greatest game I've ever played of all time or anything like that, but I was so surprised with the quality and with the level of entertainment I got out of it.
That's outstanding. I was genuinely surprised because when you first told me about it, I searched PlayStation Home and got a bunch of videos about how much people hated PlayStation Home. So Home for PlayStation, not to be confused with PlayStation Home. But it sounds like a really interesting game, and thanks for pointing it out to us. I'm somewhere between that and Box Boy as far as my next digital purchase, but I'm kind of
I would pick
this
yeah I would pick this one up because the great thing about it is while I would say on average it's probably about an hour and a half, depending on the choices that you make, you could easily get through it in an hour, but you can play that hour over and over and over and over, so it's a nice mix between, you know, I don't have my entire weekend because, you know, I'm a grown-up and I have responsibilities and all that kind of junk. I don't have all this time to play this video game. I can sit down and play this start to finish really quickly, but I can keep doing that and keep getting entertainment out of it.
Well, we're going to take ourselves a quick break. When we come back, me and Dan will talk about our games in March, so stick around. Alright, everybody, we're back, and we're going to jump right back into things with Dan. Dan, tell us about your favorite game of March.
My favorite game of March, I played the shit out of this game. Like,
you certainly did.
Bought it the day it came out.
Neglected your family?
Neglected my family. Jamestown Plus for the PlayStation 4. It's part of their Spring Fever sale, so the game is regularly $15. The week that it was on sale, I think it was like $12.99 or something for the complete version. But what Jamestown Plus is it is a kind of a remaster. I don't like, it's not just a direct port. The graphics were upscaled. The music was redone. There was content that was added to it, from a PC game that was originally released in 2011. for, I think, Windows and I think for Mac too. It was made by Final Form Studios, which is three guys in Philadelphia, right? Two brothers and a third dude got together, and I was reading an interview with them, and they said that one of their favorite things to do when they were kids, because they're around our age, you know, late 20s, early 30s, one of their favorite things to do was to play couch co-op games, which is a thing that is kind of fallen by the wayside here, and Street Fighter 2 was the thing that they pointed to as, like, you know, we just used to love to sit around and play Street Fighter 2, and it was amazing, and you would get a bunch of people together and just hand controllers back and forth, and it would be a great time hanging out with everybody. They wanted to take that idea of the couch co-op and put it into a shmup, which, for those of you who don't know, shmup is the cool kid way of saying shoot 'em up, because that takes too fucking long, apparently. Shoot 'em ups, I know, Chris, I know that you love them.
I do.
Fucking, the more bullets on screen, the better for me. I know Tiff doesn't love them all that much. Dean,
they give me seizures.
Yeah, they are. They can be seizure inducing, but which is bad. I gather if you're prone to seizures. Dean, how do you feel? Do you?
I have a tramp stamp on my back that says shmups.
That's dedication, sir. That's hardcore.
Yeah, it is. I know. That's why I did it, bitch.
All right, well, then this game is right up your alley then. I suppose.
What alley is that, Dan?
I was going to say the back alley, but I thought that was way too easy of a joke to go with, so I decided against it.
I'm not comfortable with any of this.
So anyway.
Thank you and good night.
You know, I was going to tweet these guys when we were done, like, hey, talked about your game and see if maybe that they cared, but not now. Okay, so Jamestown Plus, one of the things that really drew me into this game was the story, because it's so ridiculous, right? We've all been to school. We know the story of the British colonization of the Americas and kind of how that all played out in the Roanoke and Croatoa and all that, like, the big mystery that really wasn't a fucking mystery. And, you know, all of those stories that we learned in history class. What this does is it takes that setting and those characters of Sir Walter Raleigh and John Smith and Virginia Dare and places them on Mars in a sort of steampunk setting.
Natch.
You know, and the Martians that are fighting against the British colonists are allied with the Spanish Armada, as they are wont to do. And that's the setting for your game. Sir Walter Raleigh is out to clear his name. He feels that he has been wrongly imprisoned, so he hops in his ship and shoots the shit out of everything that he possibly can, both Spanish soldier and Martian citizen alike.
Sold.
Mostly it's a lot of freaky
right?
Lights, though.
Right? Like, yep, that sold. Was all I needed. That was the only thing I needed to hear. I went, steampunk, colonization on Mars, yeah, I'm in. It's a shmup. It, done.
I'd have played it if it was a gem swap.
Seriously. That is such a great story. The game itself.
That must be a boy thing, because I started getting into the story and was going, I'm sorry, what?
Well, yeah, but it's
what?
So,
the ever-loving mother of what?
It's so ridiculous. Like, the second boss is the Lady of the Lake. Like, after you fly.
Yeah,
because
that
this...
has something to do with the colonization of the Americas.
You never read that story? King Arthur
King
comes
Arthur's
to America.
Colonization of the West Indies, where he thought he was. But he
like
was wrong.
Like a kid in King Arthur's court here.
Yeah, you know. But, no, like, the second level, you fly over, like, the destroyed sign that says Croatoa on it, and you get to the boss battle, and out pops this giant Martian head with, like, tentacles and shit and, like, weird plants that are shooting things, and she's the Lady of the Lake. It's fucking brilliant. Anyway, I digress. The game itself, The one knock that I will levy against it is that it does not have online multiplayer. And like I said, I read their interview. They said they wanted it to be a couch co-op. You can play it up to four people at the same time. Tiff does not play these types of games. So I have not played...
Because I will die.
Right. I have not played the co-op feature of this game. I went through the whole thing single player. So going through it single player, the game plays so incredibly beautifully, and it captures that essence of the very best shoot 'em up games that there have ever been, where you get into that very zen-like, tranquil state of where you are just the tiniest movements to dodge the bullets, because your hitbox, like all shoot 'em ups, is very, very small. It's only like really the square pixel above your character's head is where you can take damage. So everything else, you have to dance in between the enormous amount of bullets that are on screen at any time. And one of the things that I thought the game did really, really nicely was that you start off the game, and if you're like me and you don't have a lot of time for these things, you start off on easier difficulties, because god damn it, I've played it. I don't have anything left to prove, I feel, in video games. So if there's a normal mode, that's what I'm starting on. I never start on hard mode, because I don't have the time to sit through things anymore, you know? And maybe that's just me. But when you get past the first three levels, it says you cannot advance to the next level until you go back and beat them on the higher difficulty. It was like, all right, well, kind of fuck you. But I feel like you've taught me enough that now I can go back and I can play this. And, you know, it forces you to get better at the game as you play through it.
Yeah, see, to me, that sounds like game padding.
Sure. I suppose that's a fair argument. I don't know. What do you, like...
I guess it's a little paddy, but it's also... I mean, this is an old style of game, and that's the way they used to do it. Like, there was plenty of games where you couldn't get the proper ending until you did it on hard mode. Because you play through Double Dragon 2, you're not going to... On normal, you're not going to see the last boss or the last stage. You're going to get to the end, the game's going to be like, all right, put your man pants on and start over again. So
try harder.
And that's kind of like... It is kind of like padding, but it's also in a game like this that's... I mean, if I've come to understand correctly, the game's only, what, like 5 or 6 stages long?
Yeah, it's 6 stages long plus 2 bonus stages. You can get through the whole thing in like 45 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, this is the
really?
Kind of
then
thing...
Really? Then why did you play it for so long?
Because he wanted to put his manliest of pants on.
That's right. These were chaps. Wait, no, that's not manly.
It kind of goes back to the horror game to Home that you were talking about. It's different ways of playing it, and the way that this game obviously does it is by teaching you to get good, as it were, and then that's its replayability. You know, that's this game's replayability factor. So, I mean, to one extent, it's padding, but it's acceptable padding, because what you were doing is more of what you want the game to be doing.
Right, and like the game, I find these games, like I said, I love shmups. I adore this genre of game. And the fact that there are 12 ships, like you start with 4 and you can unlock 8 more, I want to play through each level with each ship, because each ship does a different, it has like a different special ability. One of them shoots missiles, one of them has like a weird beam that it shoots out, another one has just this straight laser thing, and I'm like, okay, I want to play through the game with each of these different, you know, abilities and see if I can get through it. Am I only good at this game with just this one particular character?
Yes, which, let's move on.
Yes, it turns out that I was. I'm not very good at it without... I'm good at it with the character who moves fast, right? Because that's just where I found that I was successful.
How fast?
Now, the video that I watched of it, and what I thought was really interesting, which I initially thought was this game's hook, but now that you're explaining the different ships have different abilities, was the ship that the person was using had like a regular spread shot as its regular gun.
Right.
But as you could switch that over to a super thick beam, like a like crazy thick death beam.
Yeah, that's the that's your the ship default. Down. Yep, that's
okay,
the default
so
ship.
Is that the way it works with the other ships? Is that the different ships when you're using the special weapon, you slow down, but the that's a really cool hook. They kind of like, I think a lot of the really great shmups like that, like say Ikaruga has that great polarity mechanic. You know, right. If it has that neat little extra layer on top of it, and I think the controlling your speed versus power innately in which ship you're using, which weapons you're using, is a really cool hook. And first off, when you said Jamestown Plus, I was like, I have no idea what this game's going to be about. When it turned out to be a shooter, I was just completely mystified by it. But it's a really neat concept for a game. I think it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I play, like I said, I mean, I played this nonstop for 2 weeks until Axiom Verge came out, really. I mean, every mm-hmm. every minute that I had to play, I devoted to Jamestown Plus, because not like once you get through the main game, there are challenge missions, and I still have more to go back and do in that.
Oh, good.
You know, but there's different challenges to unlock. There's just a bunch of different stuff to buy in the store, and it's a fucking phenomenal game. And we haven't even touched on the music, which is so brilliant and so good.
I will give you that. The music was hilarious.
Like, you get to the fight, you get to fight the conquistador, and when you get there, there is like an ancient choir that sings Conquistador at you. In like
great.
The most Monty Python of
awesome.
Ways, it's so fucking good. Like that, it is. I cannot recommend this game highly enough. It's on Steam, the original version. The PS4 version is like $15 now. Other than not having online multiplayer, which I think would be really awesome, other than that, this game is amazing.
Unless you have sensory processing issues, in which case. No.
Right. But that is a legit thing. And if you have sensory processing issues, shmups are not for you.
The problem is that we have kind of an open concept main floor and a very large television. So,
so there's a
there
lot
was
of
really
bullets.
Nowhere to get away from it.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
The music is really good, though.
Everyone
awesome.
Should
so
buy it.
Jamestown Plus, that's another game for me to look out for. No.
PS4, PC and PS4 exclusive, not on Vita yet, but supposedly there is a Vita version.
I cannot
later
even
this
imagine
year.
How that would be possible.
Well, they just make everything smaller. It's a smaller screen.
Tiny,
very high resolution.
Little screen. Babies.
little baby chips and little baby bullets. little baby conquistador.
Mm-hmm. There you go. See, perfect. We already figured it out. Kickstarter going up. Baby Jamestown. Come to a theater near you.
Baby Jamestown.
Baby Jameson. I'd like one
what?
Of those.
What?
What? Jameson in a tiny bottle. What? You
James
guys
just,
don't want to drink?
Just,
jeez.
He just wants
fine.
A little whiskey.
Hey, Chris, what did you play last month?
Well, I'll close this out by talking about my favorite game that I played last month, which was Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap for the Sega Master System. Via the Wii Virtual Console, via the Wii U in Wii mode, which is super
what?
Awesome. Wow. I was like, Gameception.
It's a nice.
We've got to go deeper.
It's the turducken of game emulation.
And so, there's your show title, the turducken of game emulation. Can I just add as an aside that I've spoken with people who are like. So why don't your show titles have anything to do with what you guys are talking about?
Because we're fucking awesome.
Because
don't
it's
ask
funnier
us
way
that
better
way.
This way.
Exactly. So
the
anyway,
turducken of game emulation. I gotta find out what the fuck these guys are talking about. It's they're clickbait. That's what we do.
They're
we're
clickbait.
Oh my
they're
god! I just
no!
realized
listening to the
we're
show.
Assholes.
That's terrible.
We're shitty. We're shitty people.
Just realized this.
Because I'm a good person, Chris.
Since when, Dan?
Since always.
Don't lie to yourself, Dan. You're not.
All right, you're right. I'm a terrible person.
I think
you've
nice.
Admitted so much on this show several times that you're
not a nice
terrible
guy.
Person.
Yeah, I'm not a nice guy. I just smile a lot.
I think you're
people
nice.
Think I'm kidding. But I'm like, no, get away from me. You're drippy. Ugh.
What? Why are there drippy people?
Anyway.
So, Wonder Boy on the Turducken.
This is this was originally released in 1989 for the Sega Master System. Now, this is Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap, not Wonder Boy 3, Monster Lair. Because Wonder Boy is a mess, a rat's nest of video game titles that branches off in several different directions for a multitude of bizarre reasons. The original Wonder Boy, just to do a quick history, came out on the Sega Master System, and I think, I don't remember what other platforms it came out for, but Hudson licensed out the game to be able to be released on the NES, but they only licensed the game itself, not the characters, so they made Adventure Island, which is literally the same game as Wonder Boy, except with Master Higgins as the main character instead of Wonder Boy. And so these two franchises kind of branched off and went in some very different ways. And then for some reason or another, Wonder Boy was different on the consoles as opposed to some of their more arcade or TurboGrafx ports. And there's two different Wonder Boy 3s. And then I think the fourth one was called Monster World 4, which was sort of the sequel to Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap, I think. I don't know. The whole thing's very confusing. I think I have a nosebleed now. But regardless, I've never played any of the Wonder Boy games before in my life. Banjo-Kazooie, who was on the show before, had finally convinced me just from talking about the game and doing covers of it that I should really give this game a chance. I had been hearing how good it was over the years and never really got around to playing it. It showed up on the Virtual Console. I bought it and never touched it. It was just part of this large quantity of money I had to buy games on Virtual Console. And I was like, I heard this game's great. I'll play it someday. So, I finally picked it up, decided to start playing it, and I was just immediately kind of sucked into it. Like, it controls pretty neat, it's very colorful. The music was surprisingly good for a Sega Master System game, because the Master System sound chip is just, I've said it on the show before, it's chirpy, it's relatively awful, but the tunes that they used in this were really cool, and the games, it started off so weird and so different from what I was expecting, because you start off in the game as this little knight-looking dude. You know, you got your sword, you got your shield, and you're running through this castle, which all of a sudden you walk through this door, and then it's a spaceship. And then you fight a mechanical dragon. And after you beat this mechanical dragon, you're turned into a dragon, and then the game officially starts. What was neat about that was that what that section was the ending of Wonder Boy 2. And looking back on it, that made me think that the creators of Castlevania Symphony of the Night must have played the shit out of this game. Because, first off, Symphony of the Night starts the exact same way. You play the ending of the prior game and beat the last boss of that game as the intro to Symphony of the Night. And also a primary thing in Symphony of the Night is, you know, the overworld mechanic, the Metroidvania, as it were. Actually, I would say that Symphony of the Night bears a lot more in common with Wonder Boy 3 than it does with Metroid, because in Symphony of the Night, you have certain obstacles that you have to get new equipment, new armor, new weapons to level up. That's exactly how it works in Wonder Boy. You get more powers and whatnot from leveling, buying new equipment and getting new swords and getting new armor. In Symphony of the Night, there's sections of the games that are locked off until you can do some sort of physical transformation into either a wolf or a bat or a mist. That's the way Wonder Boy works. Except in Symphony of the Night, you have the option to transform into these things. Your transformations are forced on you in Wonder Boy. Like, when you beat that first boss and you're turned into a dragon, you are stuck as a dragon. You can't turn back into a human again until way towards the end of the game. And as you progress through the game, each boss you find and defeat turns you into a different creature. Like, you have no choice. This flame shows up and dances around the screen until it hits you, and then it turns you into whatever the next thing is that gives you a new ability that opens up a new area in the game. And
so it's like a not shitty kid chameleon?
Yeah, yeah. It's a not shitty kid chameleon.
Glad we nailed that down.
Nailed it right down. Yeah, it's a really cool game. It, like I said, it plays out in that sort of Metroidvania-esque style where it's one large world, and you start in this monster town with this just wonderful song, this great song. Banjo Guy does a cover of it, of the Monster Town tune, and it's just this really cute,
jaunty.
Yeah, you're playing this game in an afternoon, and it's just, this is the perfect song for this situation, and it nails it down flawlessly. And this game does a lot of that with its music, and uses that. It's this little hub, and then you kind of branch off into, like, there's a desert in the sky, there's a whole underwater section, and you keep getting these different, you just follow a path as far as you can with the powers that you have. And you have all the options to go in any direction that you want. Like, there's a lot of places that you can physically go, and there will be obstacles that stop you. And it's like, Super Metroid did this a lot, where you'd walk into a room, and it'd be burning, because you don't have the right suit to survive heat. And sometimes you think to yourself, I wonder if I could get through this room. Like, if I have enough health to just brute force it all the way through, or if I wonder I can walk through enough of this lava without dying that I can get somewhere. And, you know, A Link to the Past did that. A lot of these games that had that kind of open world mentality to them, this game has that too. There's branches, there's paths that you can go down as different characters, and you'll just be desperately outclassed, but you can kind of sequence break to a certain extent if you push yourself hard enough. I wasn't able to really successfully do that too far, because I would just say, all right, this is clearly not where I'm supposed to be, because everything is kicking my ass. And so I just find another way to go, and then go that way. But
this game, when I played it originally, because, you know, I was a proud member of the Sega Master Race.
Wow. That's the thing that happened.
It's okay. Yeah, we can... when this game originally came out, and I played it on my Sega Master System, because, like I've said before, I was really happy and loved my Sega Master System. It always struck me as very similar, and tell me if you get any of the same vibes here, Chris, to Zelda 2.
I knew that's where you were going. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, just a very similar, not necessarily aesthetic, because Zelda 2 was a little bit more washed out in its color palette.
Yeah,
it was
a lot more
bland,
like, earthy tones.
Yeah, but sort of the same. The same feel, almost the same sort of slipperiness to the character control as well, because, like,
yeah, there was definitely that inertia.
There's not a stopping on a dime thing with either of these titles.
I'm really surprised that both of you are as into this as you are, because what little I have seen of Wonder Boy does not look good to me.
I'm surprised too, just to be surprised as well.
come with me on this journey, Dean. I don't know. They look very simplistic, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but maybe I haven't seen enough of the game, but what I have seen, the enemies seem to be really spaced out and really slow and not all that difficult, and I don't know. It just kind of looked like a child game to me.
Yeah, spacey, slow. Journeys.
Well, a lot of that's going to pair. A lot of that comes down to what Dan was saying with things like the controls, and it gives you that false sense of security that, oh yeah, I can just run around and kill all these things, but they do massive damage if you're not careful, and that difficulty curve comes out of nowhere. Like, you'll be fighting these little snake things that are just kind of stationary, and then all of a sudden one of them's going to start moving towards you and jumping, and then they're going to start moving faster and jumping, and then something's going to start shooting fireballs at you. And I died a lot playing this game, like an awful lot, because you start off very underpowered, and the different characters that you get to turn into have very different attack styles. Like, the second person you turn into is this, like, little mouse man who can walk up certain walls, but you're used to playing the game now at that point as a fire-breathing dragon, and now you're a little mouse dude with a sword that has very short reach, and because you can't stop on a dime and the character moves incredibly quickly, when you're getting to these characters that have these kinds of attack patterns, you really have to think about what you're doing in order to land an attack without taking the massive damage that certain things can do to you very quickly. And figuring out where to go next and figuring out how to get over certain obstacles is a big part of it. And I think that's what surprised me so much about the game. Because I first started playing it and I thought, you know, I felt that very Zelda 2-ish vibe, like Dan was saying, but it doesn't have that overworld map thing that Zelda 2 has. Right. So everything is much more, it almost reminded me a little bit more of something like a Blaster Master. And because the graphics seemed so cute and colorful, and the music was very, the music kind of gave this sense of calming to it and a sense of adventure. As much as I would start dying by difficulty spikes that came out of nowhere, I was always driven to do more of it because I was so curious what was on the other side. Like, what's in this pyramid? I remember getting to this one part in the desert in the sky where you climb all the way over this pyramid and there's this Sphinx, but there's this one monster there, and he killed me in one shot. He just walked right up to me, threw a rock at me, and I was dead. And I was like, well, shit. I want to know what's inside that Sphinx. I gotta go. So I went back and I tried to grind and I tried to get more gold and buy more armor so that I could make my way over there. And eventually you go in there and you start to get the life increases so you can take more hits. And when things do massive damage, you can survive a hit and be like, oh shit, I need to run. Because it does that to you where you'll get to a certain point and you're not sure if you're on the path you're supposed to be on. Until something hits you and it takes away 4 hearts and you're now got half a heart left and that's all you have. And you're like, shit, I need to run. It's time to retreat and find a different path because this is clearly not where I'm supposed to be. And the fact that this all worked as well as it did and that this is a game from 1989 that I had never played, and I think what excited me so much about it was that that was the case. This was a classic game that I had never played before, that I'm just discovering now. And the fact that that kind of stuff still exists in the world for a lunatic like me, it really just, it hit the spot. It was really, really a cool experience for me to know for a fact that there's games like this out there that I don't know. As many games as I've played and as much as I collect, there's still classic experiences out there that are going to be able to excite me and rope me in that I haven't had. And it's just a really cool.
It also really makes me wonder, like, looking back at this, like, how did Hudson fuck up so bad that they don't even make games anymore?
Meth.
Because, well, that really seems to be, like, the only explanation, because Hudson is responsible for some really excellent, classic, revered fucking titles.
They are. And the direction that they went, it's interesting that you brought back up Hudson, because this was a Sega thing, and there was a, you know, this Wonder Boy is a Sega property, and they developed these games. And Hudson did continue to license Wonder Boy games to make a couple more of the Adventure Islands, but they did their own thing. Like, they kept up with that original format of Adventure Island for longer than Wonder Boy did, because Wonder Boy 2 started to feel a little bit more like Zelda 2 with some of those loose RPG elements, whereas the other non-Wonder Boy-related Adventure Island games kind of kept up with that same motif, like the extraordinarily well-done Super Adventure Island was kind of like that. But what's even more interesting is Super Adventure Island 2 is even more like Zelda 2 than Wonder Boy 3 is, where it has that overworld map, and Super Adventure Island 2 is a really great game, and it was some Hudson stuff really on top of their game. And the fact that they don't make anything anymore, I think, doesn't Konami own those properties now?
Yeah, Konami bought them. Well, like, and I think part of Hudson's downfall was the TurboGrafx stuff, that they got so into the TurboGrafx 16 and were, you know, partnered up on it and, you know, that whole deal. But it's just a shame because they had a lot of this stuff and they influenced a lot of these things. And I don't know. It's just it's a sad kind of footnote in video game history.
It is. I try to hold out hope that some of those properties might come back someday. You know, I mean,
give me a brands like Bonk's Adventure. Damn.
Yeah. Brands like Bonk and Adventure Island and Bomberman. Like, those are the kinds of brands that they're just ripe for some sort of modern revival.
Remember what happened the last time someone tried to make a Bomberman?
Yeah. They made them all aggro and shit.
That went away pretty quick.
Ooh, yeah, Bomberman! Let's do it!
Let's make him into a giant robot with a scar over his eye. That's a great idea.
So stupid.
God.
Did the Wonder Boy games have anything to do with Alex Kidd?
No. No.
No? Okay.
That was just another Sega property that had a similar bizarre history to it.
Alex
not quite as convoluted.
Word and world and
Alex
Kidd and Shinobi World.
Shinobi World.
Shit.
That's a cool game. That's so bizarre.
Weird. But they have they I don't know, they always kind of struck me as very similar properties.
Yeah, and you're not wrong there. Because it's back when Sega had a whole lot of cool
seldom,
things.
I seldom am.
That's
so,
true. You are seldom incorrect. but yeah, that's was easily my game of March. I mean, I spent a little bit of time. I jumped into Jack Brothers for Virtual Boy, which to give a very quick impression on, I don't dislike it, but I'm finding that it is extremely overrated. So yeah, that was Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap. For the Sega Master System, easily my game of March. And that is pretty much going to do it for the show tonight. So, Dean, do the thing.
I was downloading Box Boy. I'm a little caught off guard here. So, it's on the show notes. Everything. Every little thing. If you guys can't find the show notes, you need help. Because it's right below the podcast. In fact, on almost everything, iTunes, Downcast, our website, doesn't matter what it's on, the show notes are right there. That's probably the first thing you see before you even see the little player that comes up or the download link. It's the show notes. So anything you could ever wanted, shows we're going to be at, games we were talking about, emails to find, naked pictures of Dan. Well, those aren't going to be there. That's in my phone.
Ew.
You can't have those. Those are mine. But everything else that I said.
Well, for a price.
We'll talk about that. That's in the show notes, too. Negotiation prices. So, like I said, if you want to find anything, it's all in the notes. We got some cool stuff coming down the pike. Some new podcasts and everything. And they'll be a lot of fun. Keep an eye out for that. That'll be on our website. And besides that, I believe the next place we're going to be at is Atlantic City Boardwalk Con, where we will be walking around and everything. You can come find us on the floor. We'll have our pictures posted up on our website so you can find our faces. And if you happen to find us, we'll give you a high five and a picture. Or a picture up. You're going to have to pay for an extra
picture. A high five.
Or a picture of us high-fiving each other. You don't get to be in the picture. You just get to take the picture and put it up on our Instagram later. So you get the opportunity to put something up on our Instagram, which, I mean, that's good enough. That's as good as gold, so you guys should be pretty happy about that. Besides that, we'll be at Too Many Games in June, and that'll be a lot of fun. We have a panel going on, and it's looking like it's going to be a really good time. We're going to have a table and everything, and our sponsors, the Stone Age Gamer, will be there, and we're pretty pumped about that. They're going to have some of their patented products hanging out that you can check out and everything and purchase from them. So, yeah, it's going to be a good time, isn't it, Chris?
And Bible Buffet shirts.
Yes, there darn well better be Bible Buffet shirts.
Okay, can I just say for the record, for anyone that's listening, I would like to pass on the Bible Buffet shirt because I want the Noah's Ark shirt.
Yeah, I actually want the Noah's Ark shirt. The Super 3D Noah's Ark shirt. I totally want that.
Super
3D
Noah's Ark is the greatest shirt I've ever seen.
I love it. I have that game. It's awesome. But there you
no,
go.
It's not.
No, but it does make a good shirt.
By definition, I am in awe when I play it.
Okay, fair enough. I'll give you that.
Can I stop talking now?
Yes, like we can all stop talking. Podcast over. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Dan, Dean, and Tiff, for being on the show. Join us again next week when we will be talking about something which we haven't decided on yet. So,
Castlevania.
It'll be in the show notes. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next week. You ready?
Yeah.
Test.
Shut up.
Wait, I didn't get to say test.
No one says test anymore. We're not doing fucking tests.
Okay. I'm
done with tests. Especially the HIV ones. What?
I failed it last time. It's a bunch of bullshit.
Past the written portion.
Oh, shit. shit.